Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
And welcome to the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show. That's coming to you from KVSH LP Vachon. We are the Voice of Vachon. We're located here on beautiful Vachon Island, Washington. That was the voice of Brian Brown, the creator of the Brown Briefly. Brian started it briefly and brought his high standards of intelligent discussion and current events, laced with, of course, humor and empathy, and always about baseball, I should mention. Brian's motto was less is more, more or less, and of course, he always offered a lot more. Let me introduce the Briefly panel this morning. We have our recently returned Legal Eagle, consensus builder, former Washington State Assistant Attorney General, two-time Fulbright Scholar and world traveler, Mr. Craig Bellis. Good morning, Craig.
Ciao.
Not going there yet. We have the avid defender of justice, mariner, cyclist, rower, former top secret engineer, Kevin Jones. Good morning, Kevin.
That reminds me of myself. Good to be here.
Indeed. Historian, professor, host of Vachon 2050. Which is a VOV podcast and radio show, Mr. Bruce Hallman.
Hey, good to be here.
And Amy, Executive Director of Vachon Household, Fire Commissioner, Playwright, Full-Time Shenanigans Coordinator, Amy Dreher.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good morning. No, it's afternoon. No, it's still morning.
It's still morning. Midday.
It's afternoon by the time we get to those intros.
Well,
yeah, I was thinking that.
Good midday to you, sir.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. And I'm just recovering from the Vachon crud, I think, as Bruce calls it, sitting behind the big red switch here at the Gene Bosch Broadcast Studio in beautiful downtown Vachon. So, before we jump in, let's go around the table. Amy, what's up?
Let's go around the table. I was immediately thinking exactly right now that I did not have a cup of coffee this morning.
And uh-oh.
That was a tough choice to make on this rainy Northwest day. Let's see. This week, had some highlights, but definitely want to call out, went to the Drama Doc 50th anniversary.
Oh, good.
Celebration on Saturday night at the VCA, and just really lovely. I mean, it was definitely 50 years of Vachon, too, just kind of mingling around in the atrium. You know, you got to kind of see a little who's who of who's been bringing us theater on Vachon for so long then and now, and it was just really sweet moment. And then the show was very lively. They had some really good selections from the years. I really appreciated some of the scenes that they pulled out. I really loved, and I kept meaning to ask. I'm going to ask someone who wrote the script, they had different artistic directors come up and intro the pieces, and the script was just so well done. It just so illuminated what we were going to see.
So was it live, or was it video?
Live. Yeah, it was all performed live.
Really? Oh, okay.
There were new folks. There were some of the scenes they'd had the original, they had the original actors come back on and do the scenes. Really fun. I really liked 33 Variations with Jeannie Doherty, and I apologize, I can't off the top of my head remember the guy who played Beethoven.
He was phenomenal.
Both of them really just that scene was really touching for me. So 50 years of Drama Doc really cool way to spend very that Saturday cool. And I guess I think we had the housing forum since I saw you. We did have the housing forum, that's right. Fantastic. Couple good things came out of that. Really good discussion with Teresa Mosqueda. She continues to be on it. Every time she talks, she's heard something that we've said.
I want to spend a little more time on that when we get to the small talk segment.
Yeah, for sure. No, that'd be a good one. But the big breaking news out of that, I think, is that public health did say, hey, you know what? Gray water and composting, for ADUs, DADUs, is a green light. And that's a really big, important change.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. So, housing forum, Drama Doc. I guess it all went down at the VCA for me this week.
Whoa, outstanding.
Yeah.
How about you, Bruce? How about what's going on with you?
Just a normal Vashon winter week in many ways. Sort of trying to think about spring and all the things around the house that need to be done.
No kidding.
But Thursday is opening day for the Mariners. So baseball season is upon us. And it should be the year for the Mariners to actually make it, maybe.
So
to
do
the
we,
big show.
Do we know who's going to be broadcasting this yet? I mean, it's written.
I've looked online. Major League Baseball is broadcasting
MLB.
It, but, which is a streaming service.
Right.
But I think it's available on
maybe
other.
DirecTV, maybe?
I don't know. You know, it's complicated when they killed Root.
I know, darn it.
It's all like, come on, guys.
Why did they do that? Of course, now Rick Riz is back, though, for the last last season.
Yeah. Oh, man, that'd be great if he could be there to call us going to the series.
Oh, yeah, are you kidding?
Fantastic. Yeah.
Oh, it'd be awesome.
Yeah, I think Dave Niehaus would just come on up out of the, from under the stadium and whisper,
sure
my, oh, my.
He certainly would.
Yep.
The grand salami.
That's
the grand salami.
That's
get out the mustard and some rye bread. Oh, that's great.
So that's coming up. And then... other than that, you know, kind of quiet week. You mentioned the gala for the Drama Doc. Well, there's one, the 50th year gala for the museum is coming up, I think, in April or May. And then VCA is having their 60th.
Wow.
So 50, 60 years ago, there was Vashon was hopping.
Hopping, a lot of stuff.
To go on Vashon.
Mm-hmm.
So good weekend.
No kidding. All right, Kevin, your turn.
I've got a couple of shout-outs. Are we in spring now?
Yeah,
it's officially spring.
We're now
officially
in spring.
Spring training is over.
Okay. Got it. Yeah, and I noticed that spring green has attached itself to my house and my boat.
You know, oh, yeah.
Pretty phenomenal transformation going on. Also, you mentioned VCA, and I'll just do a shout-out. They got the solar panels on the roof now.
I saw
if you have not been by VCA, and I talked to Bruce Mercer, who's on the board, and Sean is also, Sean Waldron, both have responsibility for working that through VCA. And Bruce says the first design, apparently, showed the panels on the east side of the building.
What?
And they said, we really want those panels to be visible from the highway. So thank you, guys.
Well, not only that, but I would think they get better sun on the west side for crying out loud.
And they have south-facing. You have to search out, you know, get your drone out. When you fly over next, you guys, you'll be able to see the south-facing panels, too. Yes. So thank you so much, VCA. Of course, IGA is... just right on their heels with solar, so much.
Hey, just a quick question: are they going to have batteries? Are they going to have battery backup stuff so that they'll have power when the power
goes out?
I don't
think they were able to get the batteries in the system at VCA, but we are talking about batteries. They have definitely a desire to, along with the Vashon United Methodist Church, you know, to be a place where people can go in need of shelter. So, they're very civic-minded.
And
so
you don't know about IGA either?
I do not know.
We need to find out about
that. But Pat Call wrote an awesome article in the Beachcomber this last week about what's going on with that. So shout out to Pat as well. Speaking of Pat and rowing, because he is part of that, he's also the coordinator of the Passport to Pain bike ride. But they had a regatta this weekend on Sunday out there at Jensen Point. And I only got a chance to go by after it was over. But holy smokes, I've never seen so many cars on the Burton Loop in my life. Because all the people who went down to the regatta, there were two trailers with boats in the parking lot that hadn't left before I got there, and I saw two on the highway leaving. So I saw a trailer from Oregon. So big event out on the water. I think Rowing Club needs to put in like stadium seating for that. we'll see. We'll see how that works.
Dual purpose.
I have asked if I could anchor out, and they said don't on the course, no, but for viewing.
That'd be cool.
So maybe next year. Let's see, a couple of things. I just shall mention with the rain today, I did have to skirt Camp Lake Camp Colvost to get here and parked on the east side of the lake. Yeah. Or is it Lake Giraffe? I'm not sure.
But yeah, it's close.
It's there.
Is it better than Lake Pharmacy or Lake Theater?
I think it's the biggest one that I saw. Yeah. So it's impressive.
Come over to Lake Horse Pasture.
There are so many
options.
You
bring your kayak. You know.
The last thing I'll say about the weekend was Surge showing up for racial justice. Vashon Maurice Surge teamed up. They had the initiative. Indivisible Vashon joined them in promoting collective courage. About 50 friends gathered at the Methodist Church to talk about how we can move forward in the times we're challenged with today, and true activism spirit was there in the room. So it's always great to see that going on the island.
Cool. And Craig, you're back.
Yeah, I'm back physically. I had a totally uneventful 2 weeks.
Yeah.
There was nothing going on. Once I heard that Gonzaga lost, I felt pretty bad about that. What are you going to do? No, as some of you know, my wife and I spent the last 2 weeks in Italy, from Rome down to the end and tips of Sicily.
Excellent.
And had lots of interesting experiences, and generally had an absolutely marvelous time, and tried to not pay a lot of attention to the news.
Well,
for a change.
I'm going to be asking you about that.
Yeah.
Hey, also, how's your jet lag? I got a jet lag story for you. I just want to see how you're doing.
You know how it is. When you're going west, you're a lot better off than when you're going east.
Sure.
East was brutal.
Oh yeah.
Especially since we flew. Iceland. I always do that. Iceland Air. And that's a long way around.
Yeah.
Iceland Air. And we only had, not 2 hour, hour and a half layover, but still, it's just a long
adds up.
Set
adds
of flights.
Up. Well, I have to tell you guys a very short jet lag story. It's one of my favorites. My friend from Spain, Juan Carlos, which I call Charlie, he and his wife, Maud, came a few, many years ago. In fact, it's before cell phones, which is significant. But I made him a deal. I said, look, why don't you fly into San Francisco? I'll meet you there, and then I'll fly us back up here on a pass. So it'll save you a few bucks. So I went, oh, yeah, okay, great, that'll work. So I met them in San Francisco. They got in about 3:30, I think, some 4 o'clock. I said, look, you've been at it for like 14 hours. So why don't we, I've got reservations here at the hotel. Let's just spend the night at the hotel. And we'll fly up on their first flight in the morning. They said, oh, yeah, okay, that's a great idea. So I said, all right, here's what you do. Go take a nap, and then we'll get up, and we'll have dinner at about 8 o'clock, have a glass of wine or so, and go back to bed, and we'll get up early tomorrow morning. I'll call you at 5:30, and we'll be ready to go. And they both said, oh, yeah, okay, that's great. So we had dinner. I just got, I was sound asleep, and the phone rings. I turn on the light and answer the phone, and it's Charlie. And Charlie says, Truman, it's 6 o'clock. I looked at my watch. And I said, Charlie, turn your watch around. It's 12:30.
Oh.
And I hear this big, long line of Spanish expletives. And I hear Maud in the background just howling, laughing. She thinks it's so funny. And what does he say? Were you sleeping? And I said, why, yes, I was. Were you sleeping? He said, no, I was calling everyone in the hotel looking for you, telling them that it's 6 o'clock. So now in my family, if somebody wakes up or whatever, we always say, are you sleeping or were you sleeping? That's a kind of a thing. For me this week, I was supposed to go to Ashland, Oregon for the Shakespeare Festival. And unfortunately, I came down with the Vashon crud that Bruce described. Man, is that some nasty stuff. Whoa. I took I took the COVID test and everything. It wasn't COVID. It was just the crud. And as you can hear in my voice, I'm mostly getting over it. But I've had the start of a very bad year. I've lost 5 of my friends in the last couple of months. Amazing. And last, of course, was, not the last, but next to the last was General Joe Ulatowski, who's, instrumental in starting Vashon Be Prepared and, all the disaster preparedness stuff. And the last person was, you all are familiar with the Penny Farsi building, which Penny was a big proponent of disaster preparedness. Her husband from years ago just died last week. 8 months younger than me, I must say. But anyways, yeah, Sid Farsi. I'm sorry to hear him, see him go. But anyway, yeah, so it's...
And Bob Thirkelson from the airport.
Yeah, Bob Thirkelson. Right, yeah, so Bob Thirkelson and Steve Nurse. I mean, you know, lost a bunch. My first college roommate. I lost him about 3 weeks ago. So, yeah, so boy, I don't know if it's that time of year or what. But anyway, five friends down the tube here.
It's probably your age.
Yeah, it's probably.
That's a time of year.
Yeah, I hope. I'll go with time of year. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. No, it has seemed like we've lost quite a few folks in the last month.
Yeah, we have.
It has it's seemed
been bad.
Yeah, quite a few folks have passed. Yeah.
Okay, so hey, I got to some March 24th birthdays. And one of the most important ones for me is 1693, John Harrison. John Harrison was a carpenter and a amateur clockmaker, and he invented the marine chronometer to calculate longitude while at sea. He was born in Fulby, Yorkshire, England, 1693, this date. Now, I find that absolutely fascinating. There's a wonderful book written by David Sobel called Longitude, and then there's a whole bunch more after that, but you may think it's Longitude, about the quest for determining longitude. And you guys who are sailors, you know, you're well aware of latitude and longitude. But latitude, of course, is going north and south. It's, you know, climbing the ladder. That's how you remember that. And then longitude's a long way around the earth. So that's the east and west. If you're going north and south, it's easy to determine your latitude by positioning the sun at noon. You can tell, you can go to a chart and figure out, you know, what your latitude is.
You can tell from your attitude.
From your latitude, changes in latitude bring about changes in attitude. We know that.
Right.
Yeah. But longitude, on the other hand, there's no celestial way to do that, really. I mean, they had some ways, but they were just not, they didn't function. So what you have to do is you have to take your time at the prime meridian, know what time it is there. Then at noon, you see what time it is in. Well, let's see what it's. I wrote it down here. For every 15 degrees, I think it is. It's 1 hour of difference. I believe that's what it is. This guy came up with a clock, a chronometer, that was small enough that it could be carried on a ship. And the cool thing about it, I read the book, by the way. It's a fascinating book. Fascinating. But the coolest thing about it was he used all these different woods, many of which were self-lubricating woods. Mm-hmm. And so that when the two parts moved together, the lubricant didn't change with the temperature or the pressure. And so he was able to get an accurate. And there was a prize of like 20,000 pounds, which is huge in those days. And I don't think he ever got all of it. Powers that be were not very happy with this amateur coming up with this clock. But it worked. Yeah, Kevin?
So I recommend the book also.
Yeah,
he won the prize.
Yeah.
For that. Yeah, and but the other book that goes along with it in my mind is, I think it's called The History of Navigation.
Right.
I'm not positive of that. It's like it looks like a coffee table book. And,
right.
And when I first picked it up, it's like, oh, pictures.
Yeah.
It is phenomenal.
Yeah.
They talk about on latitude, for example, notching the mast of the sailing vessel, so you could line that up with the North Star.
Exactly.
And as you got further north, the projection of the North Star to you standing in this proper place, looking at the notches on the mast, would tell you how far north or south you
are.
Wow. Right. So the other phenomenal thing is, like, Kyiv, for example, in Ukraine now,
mm-hmm.
apparently was founded by the Danes.
Right.
Which I look at the map, it's like, wow, that's a lot
a
of territory.
A long way away,
right?
Yeah.
That's a lot, how did they get there? And the whole book traces this history of not only the history of navigation technology, but also the fact that those were very closely guarded secrets.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason was because if you had the ability to navigate on the oceans, you had the ability to trade, and you had the ability to achieve wealth. And if you had wealth, you could afford all kinds of things, like armies, I suppose, right?
Yeah.
that could basically take territory. And so the whole notion of this give and take and the movement of those borders in Western Europe around and correlated with navigation technology, I found was just fascinating.
Absolutely
so
fascinating.
Check that out too.
What's really interesting is that's a Western form of navigation.
Right.
In the Pacific, the navigators use a whole different system. They use wave patterns, cloud patterns, birds. I mean, it's just a different way of relating with the natural environment.
Right.
And they navigated over a third of the globe.
Yeah.
You know, and Pacific. And populated the whole Pacific.
Right.
Without any scientific instruments. So
right.
It's a really interesting distinction between that Western sort of concept of science and precision.
Exactly.
And this sort of Polynesian sort of reading the waves and reading. I mean, they can, an experienced navigator can tell where an island is almost 1,000 miles away by the way the wave pattern.
Really?
Formed.
Because, and this was covered in the book too, I mean, they really literally went from, you know, this thing floats, hey. And the notion of the wave patterns was the prevailing wind. And currents.
Right.
And so it's the wave fronts, right? It's the line of waves and
right.
and navigating in a certain angle, right? Now, whether they had that inscribed on the deck of their boat, I don't know. Maybe they did, right?
Probably inscribed in their brain, like you said. Yeah.
But, you know, I could see get out the protractor, you know, because that's your navigation device relative to those waveforms. And then how they, you know, that thing I don't know, and it wasn't described in the book, is as you travel across a lot of water, you know, those wave fronts presumably are going to change. So
sure.
Do you know that the pattern of waves change? And, you know, 5 days in, I need to, I don't know. But yeah, it's fascinating. All the
Well, just
ways.
Think of how long it took to put all that knowledge together over time, mm-hmm. you know. That is amazing to me. My my father and I were sitting on the beach down in Mexico. My father was a cowboy rancher, right? And he's sitting there watching the waves. He said, you know, I never noticed this, but, you know, those waves have a pattern. You know, they do this and then they do that. And I said, well, Dad, how many times do you ever sit and look at the ocean? And he said, well, come to think of it, never. I've been watching an old cow's behind, you know? Anyway, I thought that was pretty funny. All right, thanks, guys. I really find that stuff absolutely fascinating. I mean, being a pilot and all, of course I would. And you guys being mariners, you know, that's down your alley too. Okay, another birthday, 1874, Harry Houdini. How about that? Famous musician, no, magician, and escape artist. He was born in Budapest, Austria-Hungary. I think that's interesting, the name.
Many people escaped from there.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. In 1909, Clyde Barrow of Bonnie and Clyde fame was born. And our last one, 1930, Steve McQueen, a famous actor, which is always great. Okay, today in history. 1832, Mormon leader Joseph Smith was beaten, tarred, and feathered in Hiram, Ohio. I don't know why I'm laughing.
Is that when they decided West might be the best choice?
I think it was right about then.
Had something to do with it.
Yeah, they got
later.
The heck out of there.
Nauvoo, they were in Nauvoo. They'd moved from there to Nauvoo.
Nauvoo.
Nauvoo riots.
That's what finally... Yeah, all right. And then what year did they head west? I mean... You know?
We talked about that just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah,
a few weeks.
I don't remember it.
I can't remember the answer.
Our poorest brains.
Yeah.
All I can say is I guess housing selection was way more difficult back then.
Yeah.
Move until you are no longer opposed.
Yeah. There you go. Okay, in 1939, the original Wuthering Heights. I can never say that. Of course, it's the film based on the Emily Bronte novel. It was directed by William Wyler and starred Merle Oberon and Laurence Olivier. It premiered in L.A. And, of course, the only reason I bring that up is that it was just here. The new version of Wuthering Heights was just here. 1944, 76 Allied officers escaped from Stalag Luft 3, which is the basis of the movie The Great Escape, speaking of Steve McQueen. He was a star of that. And 1958, Elvis Presley joined the Army. Mm. They even posted his serial number on here, which I think is kind of funny. Okay, so hey, today is the Truman Show, and I think we've talked about that before, but Truman Show is simply means that we don't have a guest, and so we kind of have to wing it. And it's kind of unusual since today is my day to host, and it's a Truman Show. Oh, there we go. Mm-hmm. I think we picked that, didn't we, because of the movie, the Truman Show? Yeah. So we talked about longitude and the determination thereof. So, Craig, since you just got back from Europe, give us the rundown. I want to hear the whole thing.
Yeah, I want a travel log.
Yeah, travel log for the whole trip.
Yeah,
whole
day by trip. Day. Maybe, what did maybe. You eat? Where yeah. did you go? What did you see? Yeah. Tell us stories of the great beyond.
Let me start backwards. I didn't get home until 10 o'clock last night.
Oh. That's what you were going to say. I was born in the high. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. You've had 11 hours.
That's another routine I just went through. Yeah, 11 hours with a really interesting landing and then departure from Reykjavik.
Yeah, I hear it was a little nasty.
It was very nasty. They had closed the airport a couple of days earlier, and they were predicting 45 mile an hour crosswinds. There was no runway running up and down where those winds were coming in. And so it was...
What did they use for an alternate? I mean, I was thinking about that.
There is another airport, but I don't know if it'll handle the big A, Airbus that they had.
Yeah. Greenland.
Greenland. Yeah, really. Greenland's got to be.
I thought that, the planes we took over were smaller than the planes we'd brought back.
Yeah.
And I was thinking they might have made some adjustment for the weather and the potential for having to turn around and go back to Shannon or something in Ireland.
For the range.
That happens.
But
no, it was an absolutely incredible trip. Lynette and I had put off a trip many years ago because it was like the first day of COVID.
Oh, geez.
And we were all set to go to Edinburgh, Scotland, and do all of Scotland up around the top and Highlands and the islands. And the day came, it was March 13th, I think, that right at the very beginning of COVID. And our people in the health care industry said, don't do it. Don't do it. Hundreds of thousands of people will die. And I go, what?
What? Yeah.
And they were right. Wow. So we put that off. And
during that time, I remember Bruce was in Australia.
Yes.
We were talking about the flight back, right? And Susie and I canceled the trip to Southern California.
Yeah.
So many people impacted.
I know. Although I wouldn't have mind getting stuck in Edinburgh. But we started out in Rome. We'd been to Rome before. So we wanted to just acclimate. We got out there and we walked around and went back and said hi to the Pope.
Did you rent a car right away?
We rented a car after the first 2 days in Rome. Yeah. Matter of fact, I made sure to pick it up at the airport on the southeast side outside of town, not in the middle of town.
That's exactly what I did in Madrid a few years ago. Mm-hmm. I stayed 2 or 3 days to acclimate. Then I picked up the car at the airport and went north.
You pick it up outside of town.
Yeah.
And brand new car.
Oh.
A Renault Captur.
Oh.
It was funny. Rick Steves, of course, everybody knows Rick Steves and his many travels and his experience traveling and the great advice he gives. He had two things that he said were musts, both of which I ignored to my peril. One was never let your tank go below a quarter. He said preferably never below a half.
Yeah.
Fumes.
Oh.
Total fumes.
Oh.
As we were heading for airport on the way back.
And Lynette was so happy with you, right?
Yeah. Well, no, Lynette was my navigator, so it was a joint screw-up, if you will.
Yeah.
And we had to pull way off the main highway to a little town, of course, that was uphill.
Of course.
At which point the reserve lights and everything went, off. We were just... totally fumes. There wasn't anything left in there.
Oh, yeah.
And we found this little gas, pump, but in front of an old building. But there was a light on behind it. And I thought, it might work. Well, it eventually it did, but we didn't know how the heck to work it.
Yeah.
It was very different than the some of the major gas stations, yeah. many of which have, they'll serve you, you know.
Sure.
But we had to, Lynette flagged down a kid yeah. on a, you know, on a Vespa.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And he comes over and he's, you know, he looks like he's about 15. Yeah. Actually, he kind of looked like an angel.
By that point,
that's
yes.
right. And more
uh-huh.
and more.
Because uh-huh. yes.
he was having trouble figuring out how to run this thing. Finally, we got it running and, oh.
Was because it, we was it diesel, to diesel or gas?
Yeah. Gas. This was gas. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was gas. It was petrol and nice six-speed. It was a nice vehicle. Yeah. People asked me when we were, because after we left to Rome and ate like Romans and some of the wonderful, you know, piazzas, and we went south toward the Amalfi Coast.
Yeah.
And that was the other bit of advice that Steve gave, and that was rent the smallest car you can fit your suitcases in. Yeah. And our suitcases were two backpacks. That's all we had.
Oh, wow.
So we could have rented the tiniest little Fiat that, you know, that they made, sure, sure. but we didn't. We rented this subcompact SUV, which was still fairly large. He said, because you don't want to be driving on the Amalfi Coast in a big vehicle.
No.
You know, unless you're a professional bus driver who does it all the time and who are insane.
And crazy, but, indeed.
But we went down to the Amalfi and we stayed at a place above Positano. High on the cliff at Monte Persio, I think is the name of the little village up above, where until just a few years ago, if you wanted to get up there, you had to go 1,500 steps from Positano up the side. I mean, just sure, literally up a cliff to get up there. But as it was, we could drive, but the drive was always interesting.
mm-hmm.
Although I always said, I felt like I was in my element. I loved driving in those kind of circumstances.
Oh, yeah.
So we had fun. I told Lynette, I said, Lynette, what are you going to say when people ask you what was the most fun place you went? And what about the most interesting place you went? Well, the most fun place we both agreed on, and we both agreed on both of those criteria. One was Positano, because the people that we stayed with, Ensa and Alberto, oh my gosh, they have a motto in their little tiny ancient place that they've refurbished and made unbelievably beautiful inside these little suites that they have, these three suites, is you come as friends and you leave as family.
Oh.
And we did leave as family. We were hugging and we were drinking and we were just having the greatest time together, these two, and
excellent.
Hope to run into them again. They own some vineyards up in Tuscany, and they go up there a few times a year.
So obviously they speak English.
They do speak English.
Yeah.
They do speak English. Although we did, on that particular vein, we did go to a lot of places where people spoke no English whatsoever, which is always embarrassing as an American, because I speak very little English myself, let alone Italian.
Yeah.
We just loved it there and had dinner with them, actually. They made breakfast for us every morning, but we went to a restaurant that was down the street. This little village that they live in had two world-class restaurants. And, of course, they know everybody.
Of course.
Absolutely everybody. So it made it all that much more enjoyable. Then we left there promising that we would keep in touch and remain good friends. And we went down to, it's pronounced a number of different ways, but Pistum, which is one of the Greek ruins areas south of Sorrento. And it, 600-year-old Greek temples in just unbelievable shape. I mean, you know, they hadn't been rebuilt or anything. It was a wonderful place. And it was just the most peaceful place.
Mm.
People having their picnics out on the lawn between these huge Greek temples and the history of these temples, 600-700 years old, BC, wow. Excuse me, BC, 600-700 BC. Mm-hmm. We left there and we went to the most interesting place that we went to, Matera. Matera, for many of you listeners might know, is a UNESCO World what do you call it, spot?
Heritage spot.
Yeah. It's the town made famous recently in the James Bond movie.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of the Bond movie, but at the very beginning, he's driving the old Aston Martin, and he comes up in front of this hotel with his new girlfriend, and it's all just the most beautiful place. The reason why it's beautiful is not only is it all stone, everything is made out of stone, of course, but this is the place that has been occupied since before 7000 BC.
Oh, hey gosh.
This is the one with the caves.
Oh, right.
And they were able to, after it was declared a UNESCO heritage site, they got lots of money from the Italian government to preserve the whole hillside of caves. And they're preserving them with things like museums and whatnot, but also with accommodations. So they have these fabulous accommodations where you're living in one of the caves.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Yeah. But with all of the modern conveniences, well, not all of them. You don't have a television, but you do have wireless, you know.
Wi-Fi.
And, you've got an incredible shower in the back of this cave, you know, around the corner. And, you know, you've got your bidet and all that stuff. But and they've done the most incredible job of making these changes without damaging the look at all.
Right.
From outside, it just looks almost like it did a few thousand years ago.
Wow.
But the people lived there until the 1950s in these caves, until the Italian government decided that this was the shame of Italy. They called it the shame of Italy. Well, you can imagine the some of the public services or whatnot, health issues, living in this cave. And you lived in the cave with your animals.
Oh.
Yeah, right.
And your methods of relieving yourself were in the cave behind your bed.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So you
convenient,
just
convenient though.
Yeah. Very convenient. As you get older, you do kind of
I appreciate that.
Especially if you've got a bathroom on one floor and your bedroom on the other.
We know about that, yes.
But it was really, truly one of the most remarkable accommodations we've stayed in, and just wonderful. We took walking tours of the whole city. A lot of rock churches. Churches that are negative sculpture. They're carved out of the rock.
Right.
They're not. Nothing's built because it's all real hard limestone down below, and then as you get higher, real soft limestone.
Mm.
And it's not that difficult to work with. But it's a beautiful. Check out Matera on the internet. Just like it sounds, Matera.
Mm-hmm.
You're shaking like your head, Bruce. Like, have you been there?
No, I just know a bit about it.
You knew something, yeah.
The shame of Italy.
That's right.
Interesting post-war kind of.
Because we talked to one of our guides, a woman, was a granddaughter of somebody who was moved out in the 50s.
Oh, really? Oh,
and I asked her, I said, did they want to be moved out? And she said, well, her understanding is about half of them did and half of them didn't. Because they, as bad as some of the conditions were, they had a real community. People, you know, they all helped out. They all got together out in front of their individual caves. And it was something, you know, they were moved into, you know, blockhouse.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
You know,
public housing.
Exactly. So that's an interesting story. Real briefly then, from there, I know I'm skipping a couple of places. But from there, we drove down to Messina. We took the ferry over. And their ferries are not exactly... I don't know if you ever made that crossing, any of you, from San Giovanni, I think, over to Messina. It's very short. It's not much longer, actually, than going over here to West Seattle. But it's a zoo. I mean, it is. There are many, many different ferry companies.
Oh.
And many, many different docks.
Uh-huh.
And many, many different signs.
I think I'm getting a picture here.
Yeah, following you.
Well, we kind of lucked out. I had done tremendous research on all of this stuff in order to lower the anxiety level.
Yeah.
Every time you came to a difficult spot, I wanted to know how it worked, where exactly, and you never get exactly where you go. But I got the tickets beforehand. I could flash the tickets at the individual who somewhere, you know, they go, oh, no, 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 all right, follow that, people. You know, then you drive all the way through town and have to come back again and get in the right line.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, they also have a train. The train goes on.
Oh, underground?
I mean, no, it goes on the ferry.
Really?
It drives onto the ferry, on the tracks. Goodness. Yeah, right on the ferry and rolls right off again on the other side.
Huh.
And we went to Termina, where a White Lotus, I guess, was one season was filmed. A beautiful place with an ancient amphitheater in it. And as we were there, we had a wonderful accommodation on Duomo Square. Beautiful little piazza. That we looked out from a balcony on the square, and also had some of the greatest restaurants there. But while we were in the theater, walking around in the theater, Mount Etna, which is right there next to it, 11,000 feet, you know, right from the water, rising right up, starts to fume, starts taking off a little bit.
Yeah.
And I got on the internet and I checked the condition. They go, there were, and then 2 days later, there were actual lava pumping out of it.
Wow.
Unfortunately, I missed that show.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So Taormina was just a beautiful place. And another place that, you know, you're driving up on the Italians are incredible the way they build roads. Their signage is horrible.
Yeah.
But the road engineering is unbelievable.
Really?
Everything is on the side of cliffs. So it's sort of hanging there, counter-levered or with something a little bit underneath it to support it. Super, you know, you're making corkscrews underneath in order to go up these cliff sides. And it was rather extraordinary. From there, we went to a place called the Villa Romana, de Calais Castle. And it's right in the middle of Sicily. It's a place that has the most beautiful and extensive mosaic floors of anywhere.
Oh yeah,
in the United States.
You posted pictures
in Europe. Excuse me, in the United States.
Yeah.
That wouldn't take much. Yeah. In Europe, and 50 plus rooms.
Wow.
Yeah, I think 35,000 square feet or 38,000 square feet.
Yeah, you posted pictures on Facebook. Those were amazing.
Yeah, this was the individual. They don't know who he was. They think he might have been a Roman senator who built this place. But he was the one who brought the animals from Africa for the Colosseum events in Rome.
Wow.
So he was the one who brought to Rome these animals so the people would go in there and for the first time they'd see a lion, or they'd see a rhinoceros, or a hippo, and he brought all those kinds of animals in there. Scary and unfortunate, but interesting part of history.
Wealthy, very wealthy, obviously.
Yes, and got wealthier.
Yeah. He was a promoter.
He was. Yeah. He was quite the entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then finally, we went to Agrigento. Agrigento's on the southwest southern coast, and it's the place that has the Valley of the Temples. You're up in the city up above and you look down on the valley across, and there's these beautiful 600 BC Roman temples down there, several of them, and the ruins of many more. It just goes on they're lit up at night, so of our room you can see the temple down below all lit up. It was marvelous. Then we flew back from Sicily to Rome, spent another night in Rome, went out to have some wonderful seafood, had these grilled prawns out of the Tyrrhenian Sea. Oh, my God. They were the size of small lobsters.
Oh, wow.
They were delicious. Matter of fact, I had to change my clothes before I came in this morning because as I was biting off their heads and sucking their tails, I sprayed juice all over the front of my... You know,
yeah. So, but that's interesting. You flew from Sicily back to Rome.
Huh? Yeah, driving back would have been a couple long days.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. No, that's only like 50 minutes
It took the U.S. Army and the Allies a long time to cover.
Yeah,
a few decades ago.
Exactly. I suspect you were going to ask me if anybody over there said anything.
Yes, I was.
About our conditions in the United States.
Yes, I was.
Well, our friends that we met in Positano, they're in the hospitality business.
Yeah, of course.
And their standard rule is no religion.
No politics.
No politics and no sex.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about the last one, but he knew that, he kind of knew where I stood right away.
Right.
And we were talking about it, and he was very, very tactful and taciturn, but he recognized that it's not the best idea to have the stupidest person in America and the president of the United States be the same person.
Yeah.
Well, that's never a good idea.
Yeah. We always say humans are the only people who have the stupidest person, stupidest leader.
Yeah, he did comment. He goes, you're going to attack Iran and you're going to take them out in 2 weeks. This is a civilization that's been at war for 10,000 years. That's not going to happen.
No.
I said, do you listen to the news? And he goes, no, I don't. I read things about the news. He says, I don't like the slants. And he said, I understand you've got Fox News and you've got, CNN and MSNBC whatever it is now, MS Now. But he goes, the Italian shows are even more slanted one way or the other than they are. Because, the head of the Italian government is... Right. Is a
Mussolini's
little Trumpian
granddaughter, or
currently a fascist. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. I know. Which is worse, in my opinion, than being an anti-fascist. Much worse.
Yeah. I think so. We were a lot of anti-fascists back in the
That's right.
Early 40s. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. So
it worked out for us.
All in all, we had a wonderful time. We did almost, like I say, run out of gas, but we made it, had a couple of little events, but for the most part, it all worked out. Lynette and I worked as a team and got where we wanted to go and had great fun and learned a lot.
I love it. I was in Alicante talking about navigation, and I'm sitting at this intersection, and I said, if we could just find the bull ring, I would know where we would go. And my wife said, you mean this building right over there? I said, yeah, that one.
That's working as a team.
That's working as a team right there.
You know, we used to travel in Europe, Lennon and I, before these little guys' phones.
Oh, yeah.
And now you look at it and I go, that's cheating. I mean, it's totally cheating. They're telling you where to take a turn down an alley in a nondescript village in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
How do they? It's just incredible.
I'll do it.
And you don't have to fold a map anymore.
No.
Come on, that was an art.
It wasn't art. And as Truman and I found out, sometimes it comes in handy to have a map. It's a good fire starter.
It's a really good fire starter. They burn great, man. Yeah. All right. So, hey, Bruce, you want to just give us a quick Vashon 250 update?
Oh, yeah, sure. Vashon 250 was the idea of John Florham, who is, I believe he's now the president of Voice of Vashon.
He's on the verge of being.
So he's on the board and part of Voice of Vashon. He came up with this idea after going to a presentation by Ken Burns last fall. And he thought, gosh, what does the revolution have to do with Vashon? Because, other than the native people of Vashon Island up until the 1850s, there were no real European settlers here until the 1860s and 1870s, 100 years after the revolution.
Sure.
So John's question was sort of, what did the revolution have to do with Vashon? So he came and talked to me, and we sort of came up with this idea
of looking at what was going on during the revolution. So each week we sort of take chronologically events in the revolution, you know, like the Stamp Act and the Intolerable Acts and Bunker Hill and Boston Tea Party and stuff like that, and look at it in terms of how it fit into the movement toward the American Revolution and toward the Declaration of Independence and ultimately the adoption of the Constitution. But then we look at it in terms of what's happened in U.S. history since that time, you know, over the last 250 years, and then look at what's happened in the last 5 to 10 years, and then look at what happened on Vashon that is similar. Okay, there was nothing here in Vashon other than the native people, but what we do is look at what are the kind of philosophical kinds of things that have gone on in Vashon.
Yeah, you know, what fascinates me about it, I'm lucky enough to be engineering this, and to hear you talk about like the Townsend Act and how that affects through history, and then how events here on Vashon are so similar to those events it's fascinating.
Yeah, it's been an interesting sort of exercise and a realization that the kinds of things that motivated the revolutionaries, the American revolutionaries, are the things that still motivate us today. And we built it around a concept of sort of the dichotomies of American history. So you've got the Declaration of Independence, which is, I think, a very aspirational document. You know, all men are created equal, and we sort of have modified that to being all people are created equal. And life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, you know, very aspirational. And contrasting that with the Constitution, which is a very procedural, kind of a user's manual. How do you do this? How do you make this happen? In an imperfect way, but how do you make it happen? And so you have this sort of dichotomy between these aspirations and these very practical working kinds of how do you make it work. And there's tensions in there. There's tensions over equality, over states versus federal power. I mean, there's all kinds of things built into it. But then relating that back to Vashon, because, we've never had our Boston Tea Party, but we've had our ferry strikes, and we've had our, sort of creating our own ferry district, which is kind of what the American Revolutionaries did.
About, yeah.
We've had people feel threatened, and so we've had attempts to create an armed sheriff's auxiliary here on Vashon to keep the hippies from taking over. When you put it in that context, you begin to understand that in every community in the United States, and in a community like Vashon, the very things that motivated the revolutionaries, the colonists, to oppose what I see as British overreach, sort of colonial mercantile policies, trying to put it to the colonies, if you will. Vashon feels very much the same, particularly in terms of King County.
Exactly.
And so when you put it in that context, it becomes an interesting way of looking at how the past and our revolutionary past is still with us today.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Been fascinating.
I'm finding it absolutely fascinating. And this is a perfect segue into you, Kevin. So tell us about King's Three. No King's Three.
Well, I'm glad to hear the hippies prevailed in the face of authoritarianism. That's all I can say.
Well, it wasn't easy.
Attrition.
Yeah, and I do have to remark, people couldn't see it, but Amy's reaction to the idea you could roll a train onto a ferry boat was pretty awesome to see right here. So there's that.
Wow.
Wow.
So trains on Vashon. Yes.
Hey, more climate-friendly transportation.
Yes.
There you go.
Exactly.
They actually used to do that on Vashon.
Did they really?
We have photographs of the Vashon landing dock with barges with railroad cars on them.
Really?
And they would bring them over here and then load them with the strawberries and then take the barges back to Seattle, unload the rail cars, and take them all over the United States.
Bill Moyer, Solutionary Rail. Here we go.
Here we go.
So, No Kings 3. It's this Saturday. Time flies when you're having fun, but this Saturday in lots of different places. But first, Molly, before she left, said, No Kings 3 posters at Vashon Print and Design.
Yes.
They're there now.
So
go. But if you are you a DIY type person, there is a sign making on the 25th of this month.
This
so
is
what's
tomorrow.
Today? That's tomorrow? Okay, cool. Yeah. Thanks for keeping me honest. 5 to 7 p.m. Backbone Warehouse.
Oh, okay.
So you go to the Sheffield building. It's not the building with the windows. It's right. The building without the windows. The door's on the northwest corner. Should be open. You go on in. They have stuff there. Just go in. They have stuff. Make signs. Have fun. And get ready. Because what's coming up is in Overtown, Seattle. Well, first of all, there's Overtown in Tacoma. I mean, you go anywhere. There's right. over 3,000 events right now. Which is hundreds more than we had at the largest protest in the country. So this is likely to eclipse that, yeah. is our expectation.
Well, I think they said 7 million for No Kings 2, and they're looking at maybe 10.
That's the, yeah, wow. yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's the trend line that we expect yeah. to be on. But Cal Anderson Park, Cal Anderson in Seattle, Overtown, noon to 4. But you can also, if you want to join the parade up to Cal Anderson, get on the 1035 water taxi. The last time we did a Overtown No Kings parade, the water taxi, I think we're within 3 seats of filling it up.
Wow.
So, you know, if you get there a little early, we got there an hour early, which was like longer than you needed. But yeah, you probably should arrive about 10. There's a party on the dock. Get on the water taxi and join the march, or just go, you know, grab public transportation up to Cal Anderson. The march is going to do waterfront march up to Cal Anderson, and then you get to march to Seattle Center, and then you get to march back to the water taxi. So bring your marching boots and mm-hmm. shoes and stuff like that. Now, on Vashon, Craig's going to be there.
I am.
Craig's going to be there. You're going to be wearing a yellow vest?
I will.
Okay, keep your eye out for Craig in the yellow vest, because No Kings 3 on Vashon from 2 to 4 at the four-way stop. Guess who's going to show up besides Craig?
Who is going to show
we
up?
We are going to have the Free Range Freedom oh. Choir is going to be there. But wait, that's not all. The Bucket Brigade, the Indivisible Vashon Bucket Brigade, yep. is going to be there.
Nice.
And I know people have tried to make this happen for months. The Community Street Band
Whoa.
Is also, oh, yeah. I think, formerly Vashon. Do I remember that history,
yeah.
Bruce?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. the Community Jessica Street the Band yeah. is going to hold down a corner. At the four-way
stop. It's
going
to be a party.
I think you
that's
would,
a No Kings
you would
party.
Regret not, and when it makes history books, if your name's not on the list, it's like, too bad. You heard it here, so be there.
Be there or be square.
Absolutely.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah. So we're about to run out of time, Amy, but give us a quick rundown.
Well, I do want to say good job on riding the water taxi, everyone. Our ridership has not gone unnoticed. Of the water taxi. I'll just kind of leave it at that. But good job. And we have been seen for our ridership. And I believe that we may have some smooth sailing ahead for the water taxi. We've, you know, it's sort of been, the funding has perpetually been in jeopardy. Hopefully I'd stay tuned to learn more about the water taxi.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you, Sally Fox. Thank yep. you, Dow yeah. Constantine.
Indeed. Yeah, so yeah, yeah, yeah. and let's see. I mean, you know, the legislative session. It'll be interesting a lot to see how a lot of the things that came down. I know the most obviously about housing. How King County interprets that. Right? Like, how does the county sort of apply what the state is saying and interpret that? And where does the money go? Any taxes available? You know, does the county give the tax breaks that the state might have made available? Does the county charge? You know, I know Teresa Mosqueda is looking a lot at short-term rentals. You know, they've not given up that bone in terms of regulating that. But it's fascinating. You can live in a cave in Italy, but you can't put up, a 200-square-foot ADU on your yard, your 5-acre property in Vashon, right? So either King County is just the hardest place to live that's ever existed, or something's going on at the county that we want to keep making sure that our voices are heard and that we're Indeed. Supporting changes they're making, like allowing composting toilets, gray water use. That's going to be really important as that rolls out. But, you know, I think obviously everything's taken up by the millionaire tax, right? All of the oxygen in the legislature.
Did it pass? I mean, it did pass, right?
Well, it did, and the governor signed it, and now we go to court.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now we wait.
Yeah.
Yeah, now we go to court. But, you know, I was encouraged by the housing conversations in the legislature, and I was encouraged by the housing conversation that we had here. I think Good. Gentle infill is there. They are hearing and pressure, right? It's not easy. You know, an entity doesn't like to change in and of itself.
No,
so,
no, for sure.
you know, continuing, whether it's riding the water taxi, you know, talking to our officials about ADUs, and, you know, they're economically vital, right? we got folks, you know, aging out here, and ADUs, DADUs can be an important way that we keep Vashon, Vashon.
But since we lost VCC, you know, there's no place for our elders to go. Mm-hmm. So this mm-hmm. is a perfect place to do that. Mm-hmm. What about the center? What's it called? The new 188th? Is that pretty much filling up now? Or
it is. We still, you know, we have this, we had to trade our souls for money, and we have 8 more veteran units that are just, you know, it's really difficult to convince somebody at, you know, 30% to leave all of the resources they have over in Seattle or Tacoma or wherever to come over to Vashon, right, where they are further away from healthcare, they're further away, sure, from the social services they have. Yeah. So we will be continuing to have conversations with the county about, hey, why is it that we are mandated to have these 8 to 10 units just sitting empty when we have folks that desperately need housing?
Absolutely.
Right. And by the by, I know we had to get some extra money for you because the project costs went up. But those project costs went up because you sat on those permits for years.
Yeah.
So let's have a good give and take conversation.
Boy, King,
right?
County. King,
yeah,
County.
But keep talking, keep writing, keep talking. It's, you know, with someone like, you know, Teresa in there to listen, I think it's helping us. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One quick shout out, legislative session, Unmask ICE legislation did pass.
Yes. Hallelujah.
Thumbs up for that. Rulemaking should be interesting about how they actually create a Washington administrative code.
Well, they're working with TSA now, they're in the Unmask. So there they are.
By the way, I never got through customs faster without ICE being at the airport.
Oh, yeah.
Here yesterday.
It went, I'm sure.
We just zoomed right through.
Excellent. Excellent. Bruce, next week.
Next week, we've got John Whalen visit us.
Oh, yay.
John is an interesting guy. 7-time national Ireland champion on the button accordion. And so he's going to talk about Irish music and the music scene on Vashon. Interesting show.
I'll tell you what, I've listened to his new album. It is phenomenal. The guy is amazing. I can hardly wait.
Thank you, Mr. O'Brien. You're a little biased.
Oh, no, no, me? No, I can't imagine. I can't imagine that. Well, hey, for Amy, Bruce, Kevin, and Craig, who's recently back among the fold, and Truman, we'll see you all next week. Thank you, guys.
Yeah.
You were great.
Awesome.
Yeah, when do we get to the travel log? Mm-hmm.